really warm welcome to the very first Sinaden podcast with Robert Foster and Richard Good from the University of Birmingham in the UK. Why don't you come along and join us as we explore together an absolutely fascinating gospel, this year's lectionary gospel, the Gospel of Mark. Along the way, we'll be reminded of things forgotten, introduced to new ideas, views, and insights. Hopefully, some things will inform, amuse, perhaps challenge, and even annoy. But at the end, we hope that we'll be able to see a familiar but remarkable gospel in a new light and gain a deeper appreciation for a little book that changed history. And a little later on in this podcast, we'll be hearing from Professor David Parker, who will be talking about some of the characteristics and just giving an overview and an introduction to the gospel. Well, first things first, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Richard Good from the Sinaden Project, based at the University of Birmingham. And you are?
I'm Robert Foster at the Queen's Foundation, which is just down the road. And I'm also a lay preacher, so I come to this with not just the academic hat on, but also as someone who has to take what I learn and use it week by week in the pulpit.
Which is extremely vital for somebody like me who, coming from an academic background, essentially as a historian, looking at texts, looking at how they work, looking at the way they were written, the way that they were transmitted in the first stages and in the first forms and how they begin to develop. That's my field. What I'm fascinated with now is how the church uses that as their text today and to work through some of those questions. I think as we start this series of looking at the Gospel of Mark, the thing which strikes me is that it is the one book in the Bible which really got me fired up about biblical studies. And so I'm going to be really looking forward to exploring this in much more detail in talking to you and in talking to other people. How have you come across the Gospel being used within the church? Because within biblical studies, it's the pivotal Gospel. In a sense, it's the one that we see as starting the whole thing off. And so it's pivotal to us. But I kind of get the impression that it's perhaps not always seen as the Gospel to read within the church context.
I think, in fact, you've hit the nail on the head here, that whilst it may be pivotal in research, in the church, the tendency is to perhaps even ignore it. And I think there are a number of reasons for this. The first point about the gospel is there's no Christmas story to tell, so it doesn't get a look in at Christmas or at Advent. Secondly, there's not a great deal of teaching material. If you want to go for the teaching material, you'll look at the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, or you'll perhaps go to the Sermon on the Plain in Luke. If you're looking for certain, say, the parables, for example, again, Matthew and Luke provide a lot better examples. And so Mark somehow seems to lose out. And I looked at my own preaching record and was horrified to discover that whilst I've preached more than 20 times on the other three Gospels, I've managed just a miserly 4 sermons on the book of Mark.
Well, that's really interesting, because it does seem to bear out the historical or the traditional use of the Gospel. Hopefully, in a later podcast, we'll be talking to somebody who is a little bit more of an expert on these matters and the use of the Gospels within the early church. But it does seem to be this tendency of seeing Mark as a not just, I guess, because of its diminutive size, but almost as a diminutive work in itself, which I think is much the detriment for the reader, because there is so much in it. And as we'll see from the interview that we're going to have shortly with David Parker, it is a very complex and sophisticated book, and its simplicity belies a lot of the complexities behind it. We have with us Professor David Parker, who's the Edward Cadbury Professor of Theology at the University of Birmingham, where he's also one of the directors of the Institute for Textual Scholarship and Electronic Editing. Those of you who are regular visitors of the Sinaden website might be familiar with his work with the Codex Sinaiticus project. Oh, and rumour has it that he's a bit of a whiz at cricket, too. In this, which is the first instalment of what was quite a wide-ranging chat on Mark, David described some of the literary style and characteristics of Mark. We then went on to discuss what might have been behind Mark's reasons or Mark's motives for actually writing the Gospel.
So what sort of things should we expect or look out for when we approach the Gospel of Mark?
Mark's the first gospel to be written, so there are no rules. Mark can do what he likes, but at the same time, he doesn't have anything to follow. He has to work things out. He doesn't know whether it's going to be successful or not. And where does he begin? What does he have available to him? We think lots of stories about Jesus, things Jesus said, things Jesus did. And he has what seems like a longer story which he has to follow. That is the story of Jesus' passion. And one of the most striking things about Mark's gospel is that almost half of it is the story of the last few days of Jesus' life. It's amazing if you look at it. The triumphal entry into Jerusalem happens in chapter
11.
And then you have Jesus in Jerusalem for a period of time and a very long and detailed account of his arrest, trial, and the crucifixion. And that's one of the most striking things about it. How does Mark organize the story? He organizes it around the very end of Jesus' life. And you find, for example, three predictions of the Passion. From chapter 8 onwards, three times Jesus says to his disciples that the Son of Man is going to suffer and die. Around that, he put a lot of different material. In the first part of it, he had a struggle because he didn't have any longer blocks of narrative. So he copes with that in a completely different way. He copes with it by having everything happen very, very quickly. If you look at chapter 1, you find time and again something happens immediately. It says in verse 12 after the baptism, immediately the Spirit drives him into the wilderness. And then a little bit later, after the call of the disciples, you say in verse 23, it says immediately he was in the synagogue, and then just a few verses later, and immediately coming out of the synagogue. So he creates this sense of Jesus almost rushing around from place to place. Events are very full, with the impression, therefore, that the narrative just gives you an overall sense of what's happening. It doesn't try to be a detailed account of everything that's happening.
This frequent use of the word immediately gives this feeling of immediacy. What other techniques do you think he uses to give this idea that we're actually there as bystanders of Jesus' ministry? I think there's something called the historic present.
Yes, that's right. In English as well, sometimes, in sort of vernacular language, like Dickens, for example, sometimes uses, I says to her, I says Mrs. So-and-so. That's an example of historic present. You're recounting something that's happened in the past as though it's in the present. And something like, if I remember correctly, 150 times in Mark's Gospel, perhaps 151, you have Jesus doing something in the present. If you look in the story in chapter 3, verse 13, it says, and he goes up into the mountain, and of course is recounting something in the past, but it gives you a sense of the narrative being taken on, and as you suggest, that somehow we're present to the story, we're witnesses to it.
Another of Mark's characteristics, which again comes out even in the English translations, and that is something called parataxis. Out of 678 verses, 410 of them begin with the word "and." What does this tell us really about Mark's approach to this material?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we know that if you construct complicated sentences, you're only meant to have kind of one main verb. But again, looking at the same verse we were just discussing, he goes up into the mountain and he calls whom he wishes and they went to him. So that's three main verbs, and he goes up and he calls and they went out to him. So there's quite a lot of debate. Is this because Mark really can't write particularly complicated Greek, so he's keeping it simple? Is it because it's a very strong narrative structure like that? As you say, it's boom, 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 everything happening one after the other. Is it perhaps to do with the fact that he's influenced by some kind of Semitic style of narrative construction, where in a language like Hebrew you tend to have a lot of main verbs one after the other in that kind of way? So it has a profound impact on the way that he writes. It is simple, it is approachable. You don't have to spend a lot of time usually thinking about what's coming across. These issues, like the use of the historic present, lots of uses of "and," I'm talking about it very much as a literary structure, but from your research, is this perhaps making it more like the spoken word? Is it how somebody might tell the story out loud?
Certainly the way that the book or his writing reads does have a very strong oral feel about it. And so it does give that feeling that this is just an attempt to copy or to imitate or emulate the oral style. Or perhaps, as others have argued, that Mark is simply just writing down, almost as a literary tape recorder, oral tradition.
There is an old tradition, isn't there, that Mark wrote down Peter's preaching and somehow, therefore, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but the tradition was it was associated with Peter's preaching. So although Mark isn't an eyewitness himself, he has contact through Simon Peter with traditions about what had happened. So is it that even if that story in its historical details is wrong, there is something of a sense of early Christian proclamation about the gospel?
Well, I think that's actually a key issue to this whole approach to Mark, which really relates to another vexed issue, and that is of genre. What is Mark? Mark starts by saying this is the gospel, but what actually is referring to? Gospels as we know them today as short books which basically tell us the life story of Jesus didn't exist when Mark was writing. So is it just the fact that Mark sees gospel as inherently something which is proclaimed, something which is spoken out, and that's all Mark is attempting to do? This is the gospel, and just the fact that he's written it down is almost incidental. It's just a matter of a particular medium.
Interesting, isn't it? Because the beginning of the gospel is the beginning of the gospel. It starts, the beginning of the gospel of Jesus Christ, ... Now, is Mark viewing that somehow as the title of his book already, or is it a title which people then gave to it because of how Mark had begun? If he's the first to think of it like that, where does he get it from? Well, one possibility is St. Paul, isn't it? Because St. Paul talks about the gospel, and the gospel for St. Paul is the message of the crucified and risen Jesus Christ, which is, again, very similar to what Mark is saying. If we track back a little bit into early Christian thought, it is possible to suggest that St. Paul was the first person who really built a Christian belief on the idea that what really mattered was the death and resurrection. Perhaps the earlier church, perhaps the people who'd known Jesus and followed him, were simply too close to all the events to have this wider view, which Paul, coming along later, did, that what mattered about Jesus, in a way, was not his life, but his death.
As we're still looking for ways into the Gospel of Mark, this idea of the centrality of Christ's death to the Gospel is probably as good a place as any to leave the interview with David Parker. However, in future podcasts, we will be returning to this interview. You're listening to the Sanhedrin Podcast, coming to you from sanhedrin.org.uk, based at the University of Birmingham. Now, it may have struck you, as it has struck us, that what this podcast lacks is your presence. Now, Robert and I can jabber away to our heart's content, and we'll do so interminably. But this is really just as much about your exploration of Mark as it is ours. So if you have any questions or comments or issues you'd like us to look at in greater detail, there may be experts that we can contact on your behalf and put to them your questions. Whatever the case, whether it's a question or a suggestion or just a comment, we would love to hear from you, and we'd love to be able to feature them in future podcasts. You can contact us through our website at sanhedrin.org.uk.
Traditionally, the four Gospels have been associated with the four creatures that appear in the visions in Ezekiel and Revelation. So you have a man, a lion, the ox, and then an eagle. And traditionally, Mark is associated with the lion, you know, the idea that, you know, Jesus is like a bounding lion that sort of suddenly appears on the scene, which he does at, you know, chapter 1, from nowhere. And in some ways, very much like C.S. Lewis has depicted Jesus as Aslan in the Narnia stories, suddenly just appearing on the scene and then disappearing again. And you get that with Mark. You know, the end of Mark is a mystery. What comes next? What's happening? Do the disciples, are they going to go up to Galilee to meet the Jesus who's promised to be there? And you have that sort of enigmatic ending where the tomb is left empty, but what happens after that?
I quite like that picture of Jesus being portrayed by Mark as his bounding lion, because certainly you do get that rather breathless feel that Jesus is certainly herring around, one miracle after another to begin with.
Well, chapter one, you know, you have in chapter one he's introduced, he's baptized, he's tempted in the desert, he calls his disciples, he has his first does his first miracle in a synagogue, he heals Peter's mother-in-law, he's then out praying, he then heals a leper. That's all happened in chapter one.
Yeah.
You go to Luke's gospel, he hasn't even been born at the end of chapter one, you know.
So if your appetite has been whetted and you'd like to study Mark at a deeper level, or just at your own pace, here is the place in the podcast where we point you in the direction of either a book which has had significant impact upon the study of Mark, or a resource which will help you find your way through the different alleys and avenues of Mark and study. Now, I appreciate that I might be being a little bit indulgent here, but if you're just beginning your journey into Mark, then I think I can do no better than to point you in the direction of Morna Hooker's commentary on the Gospel according to Mark. Commentaries are often very much a matter of personal choice, and this one, it has to be said, is fairly old, being written in 1991, and there are many newer commentaries on the market. But I loved it when I first read it, and it's still really one of the first books that I pick from my shelf whenever I'm looking at Mark in detail. It also opened my eyes to the whole field of the critical study of the Bible in a easy-to-read, informative, and approachable way. Using her own translation of the Gospel of Mark, Morna Hooker comes over as a patient travel companion who points out features and places of interest. Where she does refer to the Greek text, it's always in an understandable way, and she does not assume that the reader has prior knowledge of New Testament Greek. Okay, so I admit that this is a matter of personal preference, but I still think that this is a really brilliant piece of work, and it's a wonderful way in to the critical study of the Gospel of Mark. So that is The Gospel According to St. Mark by Morna D. Hooker. It's in the Black's New Testament Commentaries and is published now by Continuum Press. Bibliographic details will be listed on the podcast section of the forum of the Synaden website. Well, unfortunately, time's running out, and we're going to have to bring this first ever Synaden podcast to a close. But be reassured that there will be many more on their way coming to you very soon. In fact, over the next few weeks, if you are following the Gospel Lectionary, keep your ears open to something rather strange which Jesus used to do following a miracle. It was this that opened our eyes in a completely different way to the way we read the Gospels. We'll be hearing more about that in the next podcast. Well, all that remains for me to say is to thank Robert for helping me to host this podcast. Thank Professor David Parker. Thank Helen Ingram for the music. Thank you for joining us. And please join us again soon. And between now and then, happy exploring.